This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning, and welcome to another edition of Guardian Radio in the AM. And my name is C.A. Nuri, and we have an important discussion, right? And I'm excited about this discussion because of the new and recent announcements. Recently, okay, well, let me first announce what we'll be talking about. We'll be talking about foreign services and what it is, and then we go into analyze these appointments recently. Just recently, yesterday in fact, the Prime Minister announced that businessman Sebastian Bastian will be the ambassador for Central America, right? And before then, he announced that Dr. Ellison Raming will be the ambassador to the Republic of Cuba. And at that same time, he also announced that Stan Smith is the ambassador designate and permanent representative for the Bahamas to the United Nations. And this one made me pause, right? Because this was new. The wording was different. And forgive me for how I pronounce it, because you know I'm not that smart, right? The announcement was for Mr. Wendell Jones, journalist, right? And he was announced to be the ambassador extraordinary. Now watch this word. See, there you go. Mind you, I wrote down a synonym, so let me see if I can find my synonyms.
I'll help you with it.
Planetpotentiary. Look, come to the mic, and that's my guest. My guest, I'm not going to announce who he is as yet, but he is going to be helping me out with this thing right now. How did you pronounce it?
Plenipotentiary.
And I was not confused, but I smiled at hearing that word and say, wow. Where did the foreign affairs minister get that word from? That's new.
He didn't make it up.
He didn't make it up at all?
No.
Yeah?
No.
So I'm glad to hear that, and I appreciate that. So, you know, I reached out to him and said, I beg your pardon, sir, I know you're busy, right? He was away by this time. And I said, sir, I have no idea how do you pronounce the word again, sir?
Plenipotentiary.
And he did smile when I tried to pronounce it. Oh, he bawled laughing.
It's ambassador, extraordinary, and plenipotentiary.
Yes. And he sent me a voice note. And I want to play that first voice note. Mind you, it's a series of voice notes he sent to me. And I'm going to play all three, just so we get the theme of what is happening. But before that, let me read something first. And then I'm going to indicate to the producer to play all three, back to back to back, right? The PLP administration has increased its number count regarding the country's diplomatic corps. In fact, they have opened up a number of embassies around the world, even added additional responsibilities to sitting ambassadors, even reintroducing some old-fashioned terms and positions like extraordinary ambassador or plenipotentiary. Ambassador. They even continued some themed ambassadors, like the ambassador to the CARICOM, the ambassador to the environment, the ambassador to even culture and sports, right? The climate ambassador. And I want to talk about that because these are new concepts to me. I didn't know it was possible. And it surely is. And I'm still not holding off who my guest is, right? Because that's another segment. I'm excited about having him here. But I want to first play the minister's three voice notes that he sent to me, trying to definitely explain to me what these terms were. Go ahead, producer.
So what is the Foreign Service? Well, the Foreign Service is that body of people who act for and on behalf of the country in relations with countries overseas. So the Foreign Service has a body of people led, first of all, by the minister. You may also have a parliamentary secretary. You may also have a minister of state. And you have various ambassadors who serve, or high commissioners in the case of Commonwealth countries, and permanent representatives in the case of organizations like the Organization of American States or the United Nations. And then you have a body of foreign service officers at various ranks under those other designations. Foreign service is responsible for carrying out the provisions of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs Act, which is the governing statute. And that governing statute makes the Minister of Foreign Affairs a corporation sole, who's able to conduct business and contracts and can sue or be sued. And in addition, carries out the instructions of the government in relation to other states. So the first point of contact of official communication between foreign states and the Bahamas is the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and the Foreign Service is responsible for carrying out those functions. So when someone is described as an ambassador plenipotentiary, extraordinary and plenipotentiary, it's a kind of, it's an old-fashioned term, of course, and a term of art, which means the following. First, extraordinary means that the person has the highest diplomatic rank and is sent with on a special mission. So you have the highest rank and that you have a particular and special mission. And a plenipotentiary is one who has the full powers of authority to represent the country. They're direct representative of the sovereign in the old language, which would mean in our language the queen, and can actually bind the country as such. So essentially, someone who is an ambassador extraordinary and plenipotentiary is almost like the prime minister overseas on behalf of the country. In practice, of course, ambassadors are agents of the state, so they act on instructions. But people who are dealing with them, that is third parties, other nations, or if they are serving at the international organizations, know that when that person speaks, that person who is a plenipotentiary or ambassador extraordinary plenipotentiary is able to bind the country because they speak for and on behalf of the country with that country's authority. Now, the question of what is an ambassador at large? An ambassador at large is someone who has the rank of ambassador, who can have the powers extraordinary and plenipotentiary, but not accredited to a specific country. So you may have someone who's a thematic ambassador, or you may someone who is called by the government to do a particular thing. For example, when we were running the campaign about 10 years ago, now five to 10 years ago, when we started our campaign for the Human Rights Council, we appointed an ambassador at large, whose responsibility was to lead the campaign to get the Bahamas on the Human Rights Council. So that was his specific job, as opposed to being accredited to a specific country or to an international organization. We are going to be using these thematic ambassadors quite frequently in this term. There'll probably be some with culture, given the climate change issues, some with climate change. Sports will be another one. So those will be announced in the coming months. But it's a means of capturing particular expertise and giving them the powers of an ambassador as they travel overseas on behalf of the country. They have the diplomatic rank, and it eases their passage to dealing with various organizations and countries on those particular themes. The British, for example, appointed a special ambassador or an ambassador at large when they were hosting the climate change conference in Glasgow, and they sent the ambassadors out to deal with the specific themes of climate change. And we expect to do the same thing with regard to climate change ourselves. I think you also asked, what is a permanent representative as opposed to an ambassador? Well, a permanent representative is usually the expression used when someone is accredited to an international organization. So the representative at the United Nations is called the permanent representative of the Bahamas at the United Nations. And that person has ambassadorial rank and so therefore is most frequently called ambassador. Not only people who are sort of technically involved in the United Nations itself generally use permanent representative, but ambassador is the term that we use. So that's the term there. I'd also say you'd hear as well the term high commissioner. That's when you are appointed an ambassador to a Commonwealth country. Instead of being called ambassador, you're called high commissioner. Again, it's one of these sort of archaic terms, but that's the distinction. They really have the same rank and same meaning, but you're called a high commissioner if you're appointed to a Commonwealth country.
Excellent. I learned a lot there.
Yep.
Everything is self-explanatory.
Yes.
So this is where I introduce my guests. Today, I'm fortunate to have in my presence, who has an illustrious career in the public service, by the way. My wife is a fan of his. She's very impressed that I was able to convince him to come on and speak with me. So I'm excited, right? I have the former, and I might say former, immediate former, Foreign Affairs Permanent Secretary, Mr. Peter DeVoe, who has over 30 years in the public service, right? And I want to basically go over his career and find out how did he move to the foreign affairs and the service in general. And in case someone like me wants to go and join the foreign corps, how is that possible? But I'll let Mr. DeVoe Isaacs introduce himself again.
Thank you very, very much. And it's a pleasure to be here and tell your wife that it was not a difficult task to hook me to come for an interview.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Certainly on foreign affairs, something that I've been associated with. You said 30 years, you've been kind. It's actually 40.
My Lord.
Yes, 40 years that I've spent in the public service.
Mm-hmm.
Most of those years have been spent at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. So I heard Minister Mitchell speak about some of the old terms.
Mm-hmm.
Diplomacy and he's spot on, so I don't need to
go
comment
in detail
on those. No. You had some difficulty pronouncing that
yes,
term.
Yes, and I appreciate you being here.
Plenipotentiary.
Plenipotentiary.
Yeah.
See, I put the word plenty in front of it. Plenipotentiary.
Well, it simply means that he has full instruments to act on behalf of the country.
In your career, have you seen this position used frequently?
Yes, it's a frequent
term. This is the first time I heard it.
No, it's a frequent term.
Okay.
But Minister called it a term of art.
Mm-hmm.
It's a term in the Vienna Conventions,
mm-hmm.
which are the conventions that govern the work of consular and diplomatic relations. You can look up those conventions. They were a group of people got together to frame and codify
mm-hmm.
the practice of diplomacy. And so these terms are actually in the Vienna Conventions.
Okay.
And so ambassador extraordinary and plenipotentiary just means in the old world,
mm-hmm.
the king would send his envoy out.
Yes. Emissary, maybe?
Emissary, okay. Envoy. And that envoy will speak for the king.
Okay.
He has full powers to sign for the king.
Okay. So, and before I get into your career,
uh-huh.
right, I see we have a number of new embassies opening. I would like to know how hard it is to open a new one. Like, I'm going to open one in Timbuktu, mm-hmm, just being mm-hmm, facetious
mm-hmm,
there.
Mm-hmm.
What are the prerequisites to making that happen?
Well, hopefully we won't be opening one in Mali in Timbuktu.
Okay.
But first of all, you have to figure out why you want to open an embassy.
Okay.
And an embassy is there to help you promote your relations with that particular country.
Mm-hmm.
So diplomacy, and you want to get into my career, but this is far more interesting.
Well, to talk about
that.
Depends on who's asking, but I want to hear about your career. But go ahead.
Diplomacy is an ancient art, there's diplomatic practice and there's consular practice, and you have to distinguish the two. And in diplomatic practice, that is subdivided into multilateralism and bilateralism. So the multilateralism that Minister spoke about is the accreditation to the UN and those bodies where a bunch of people get around, where they have plenaries and this, that, and the other. Okay, so the UN, the OAS, other places, the EU, those kinds of organizations, right? That's multilateralism. Then there's the bilateralism. And these are the embassies that you're talking about. These are embassies and high commissions with other countries. Okay? So Wendell Jones was appointed ambassador extraordinary and plenipotentiary to the United States of America. We have an embassy in the United States of America. Okay? And so he's appointed the ambassador to the United States. Stan Smith is appointed permanent representative to the United Nations. That's in New York.
In the United States.
In the United States. But they have separate rules of engagement at the UN that is totally different. The UN just happens to be in New York. The UN could have been anywhere. Okay, so I remember years ago when there was some stink about Arafat coming to the United Nations to speak.
Okay.
And I think it was Reagan who was president at the time. And Reagan actually did not grant Arafat a visa. And the UN was totally annoyed at it. Because the UN they are governed by what is called a headquarters agreement. And the headquarters agreement says that you cannot prevent a head of state from coming to address the United Nations. And
So similarly to like how we have an issues with Russia. I put we inside that. If the president of Russia wanted to go to the UN, and you see that the United States is stopping various boycotts, I mean, doing various boycotts of Russia or whatever it is, you're saying that the UN can petition to allow him to get entry into the United States?
Absolutely. Not a question of petitioning. You are not supposed to. But Reagan did. So here's what the United Nations did. They just switched the meeting to Geneva because there's another headquarters of the United Nations in Geneva. So Arafat was able to speak in Geneva at the United Nations there. So that frustrated the aims or the objectives of the United States at that time to prevent Arafat from speaking on American soil. But the United Nations is not American soil, but you got to get into the U.S.
Yes.
Okay. So, I had the honor and privilege of representing the Bahamas at that meeting in Geneva. James Moultrie was the permanent representative at the time.
James Moultrie, the father?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. An excellent ambassador, by the way.
Excellent.
And he was the ambassador at the time, and he asked me. I don't know if it's because nobody else wanted to go to listen to Arafat because there were some serious tensions in the world at that time. But when I was in New York, I was also at the Special Political Committee. And so that was one of the hot topics of the day. And so I went to Geneva and listened to Arafat. So the structure of the international system is such that the terms that the minister used, they're very much a part of the normal terminology. You see, he also said that few people would call Stan Smith permanent representative. Those persons in the UN would.
Yes.
But so we use, he's also an ambassador.
So you used dual wording at one time. And continue on the vein of opening an embassy. I know you was distinguishing some kind of multi one, and then
So an embassy then would be a bilateral concept. So you open an embassy in a country where you want to expand and expound on your relations, where you have particular interest. We have embassies in the United Kingdom, in London, mm-hmm. Where I served. Mm-hmm. We have one in the United States. There's one in Canada. There's also one in Haiti and in Cuba. Mm-hmm. There are embassies also, but they are one in Brussels and also in Geneva, mm-hmm. and one in China. So we have embassies where we have particular interests we want to pursue. And we have either close historical ties with, in the case of the UK, most of our system is based on the Westminster system, which made sense for us to be in the UK. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people questioning why we're still there, because we're moving more and more to the orbit of the United States. But the historical ties and the associations with the organizations and the institutions in our country mandates that you have a presence there.
Okay.
There's an embassy in Geneva. That's the one that the United Nations, and also in Brussels, which we just opened last year. The one in Brussels mostly to deal with the European Union and the ACP, that's the African, Caribbean, and Pacific countries. So you want to maintain your hand on the pulse of these countries and these areas. Minister Mitchell is expounding a view where he wishes to open embassies in other countries.
Yes.
So for example, on the drawing board is an embassy or a high commission in Jamaica, mm-hmm. and also one in Trinidad. Mm-hmm. We are looking at opening some kind of legation in Dubai.
Mm-hmm, nice.
Yeah. And elsewhere. So you have to continue to look at the international arena, mm-hmm. and see where it is you can get some value from your presence being in these countries. We don't have one on the continent of Africa.
Okay.
Okay, so there's a question as to whether or not we should pursue.
And if it's beneficial to us.
Correct. So you remember now, foreign affairs is really an expression of your national interest.
Yes.
And people forget that. You pursue your national interests in international affairs.
And you speak of national interests. I want you to comment on these themed ambassadors, this ambassador of culture, ambassador of sports. How does that benefit the Bahamas?
Well, you should know that particularly in sports, we have done extremely well. Mm-hmm. Bahamas is among the top countries per capita in performance at all international sporting events. We do extremely well. It only makes sense that you should have an ambassador, the triumphant, the champion.
The champion that cause.
That kind of cause.
And as an ambassador for those themed appointments, do they get the full benefits as a regular ambassador?
You know, it's interesting that you talk about benefits, because that's one of the things that I think, for the most part, attracts people.
I want to get some of the benefits. That's why I brought you here, so you can explain how I can get one of these jobs.
But the benefits, the red passport, And the privileges and immunities are part of your work. They are toolkit. You need them to as Minister Mitchell again mentioned, the whole thing about the ease of travel, mm-hmm. When you have diplomatic privilege.
And what does that mean, ease of travel?
Well, you countries understand through what is called, because of comity, the friendliness, mm-hmm. between countries and established diplomatic custom, they treat diplomats differently than they treat ordinary citizens.
I'm able to jump customs line?
You allowed sometimes, in some countries, you allowed to go through different lines.
Nice.
it's there to help you. Remember, when you're abroad, you personify your country. Mm-hmm. You're the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. You're not traveling as Nuri, Mr. Nuri. Nobody cares about Mr. Nuri.
Lord.
I hate to tell you that, but nobody cares. But they care, mm-hmm. because you're a representative of your country. Mm-hmm. And that's why you get the passport. Now, the sad part about that is that you're not a diplomat in your own country. Mm-hmm. So sometimes when they come back and they won't be diplomats in their own country, you can't have privilege in your own country.
Mm-hmm. And now I'm going to move toward you, right? You spent 12 years in London.
No.
You didn't spend 12 years in London?
No. You must have read that. They must have prepared that bio wrong for you. Let me tell you what I did. Let me.
Okay,
you want to talk a little bit about me?
Step by step.
Let me tell you, you know, my wife is going to get annoyed at me because she tells me I don't tell my story enough.
Go ahead.
But, and I don't like to very much because it's out there. When I joined government, I went to St. Augustine's like you did. We went to the right school.
Mm-hmm, the good school. The only one school there is.
Yeah. So, but I graduated in 1973. Mm-hmm. That was the year of independence.
Okay.
So I'm an independence boy.
Yes.
And the government of the day and Mr. Pinling himself inspired us to build a country, build a nation. So when he came to St. Augustine's and spoke at our class, and he said, "Look here, you guys need to help us build a country, build a nation." Mm-hmm. That did something to my generation.
Wow.
Yeah. It was powerful. Mm-hmm. And so I remember in class, in a history class at SAC in Form 3, getting up and telling the class that I wanted to be a diplomat. And my job. Yeah, and my classmates looked at me and said, "Sit down, but you don't know what you're talking about being a diplomat." and it was because we were discussing some war and the term diplomat was mentioned. So my journey starts from that inspiration, wanting to serve to help build a nation. And the service has been very kind to me because when I started, I was at cabinet office, and shortly after, I went to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
Yes.
Just 2 years after I joined, just fresh out of college, I got my degrees. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I'm the smartest person in the world.
Yes.
And I get into the rail work, and I was able to go to Foreign Affairs. And shortly after that, it was Paul Adley who appointed me to the Court of St. James in London.
Okay.
So I became a diplomat in London. I spent 3 years there.
And tell me about that. When you say become a diplomat, what did you do exactly?
Well, the you're representing your country. Mm-hmm. The easiest way to describe the work of a diplomat is that you personify your country. You are the personification of your country. Mm-hmm. And it's not only wearing this little lapel flag that I wear. It's the responsibility that you carry for representing your country and everything about your country. So the whole question of privilege and this, that, and the other was all there to help me go down to the Commonwealth Secretariat, which is based in London, go to the Commonwealth Institute. Also, because at that time London covered Europe, we had to travel to the European communities in Brussels, and also in Luxembourg, and we had to represent the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. The interest of the Bahamas at that time, for the most part, was sugar, alcohol. Sorry. Mm-hmm. And so we were there. We had to go there to represent the country.
So it was a team there, like in London. How many people?
It's interesting because no. See, now you're talking about back in the day.
Yes, yeah, back in the day.
Only a couple of us were wrong.
Oh, okay.
So when I went to London, I was really the only diplomatic officer there. The High Commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you remember that term that the minister mentioned?
Yes.
So he is the head of the office. He should be called an ambassador, but we call them high commissioners in Commonwealth countries. Mm-hmm. And that was Mr. Roberts, Anthony Roberts.
Okay.
And Anthony Roberts was soon to be replaced by Richard DeMeritt.
Mm-hmm.
You would have known about Richard DeMeritt, who used to be the Auditor General.
Okay.
But when I went up there, I was the only trained, appointed diplomat, mm-hmm. not a political appointee, no. As a person who was trained in that field, to the extent that I was able to have gotten that appointment.
So you just give me a segue to ask a question. You mentioned political appointee
yeah.
and a trained diplomat.
Yeah.
Just briefly explain what's the difference.
So Minister talked about the Foreign Service.
Yes.
So the Foreign Service is, and we now have an institute for training.
Yes, I see that.
Yeah.
A lot of schooling.
Yeah, no, we, so the idea is to make sure that there's a cadre of personnel who are trained in diplomacy, who are trained in international relations, who understand the craft of diplomatic work. Mm-hmm. Governments come and go, mm-hmm. and governments have their own agendas and their own priorities. But you need permanent people who are career diplomats to really push and to ensure that the craft is done properly. Mm-hmm. So you don't want a Wendell Jones going to Washington without there being a trained career diplomat there to help him.
In politics, they say that a handler?
Well, no.
So you have a handler?
That smacks too much of politics.
Okay.
Because foreign affairs in its truest sense is supposed to be apolitical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anybody who comes into government should have the same interest in protecting the country.
Mm-hmm.
So the people who work at diplomacy and try to master that craft will tell you that for the most part they are there just to serve country. So they will assist the incoming ambassador, high commissioner, making sure that they advise him or her on the rules and the procedures, the norms, the protocols. Because remember now, diplomacy is an art.
Mm-hmm.
And a science, but mostly an art. And you don't, as you know, in art, you don't develop that overnight.
Okay. Just for the public who's listening, I know we have an institute now that trains diplomat, and you are a career diplomat, right? If someone was interested in joining the Foreign Service, they get a job now. So I assume they go through this.
Yeah, this is new, you know.
I understand. So this new. I have a friend who just got accepted to the diplomatic corps.
Well,
yeah, we used to be here on the radio together. But I mean, I digress. But I see she's going to training every day.
Yeah.
She says she's in class.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know of whom you speak. So
yeah.
So,
yes. So I can leave it just as that.
Yeah, no. So the idea, and this is Minister Mitchell again.
Mm-hmm.
With his forward thinking.
Oh, so this is, when you say new.
Yeah, we've been talking about the Institute for years.
Okay.
We've been talking about developing a training
mechanism for
years.
And this is the first time it started?
We have not even formally introduced it as yet.
Wow.
So on paper, it's being developed.
Yes.
But we have a cohort of some 30 officers
mm-hmm.
who are now going through this training.
Nice.
Yeah, and we have, it's headed by Ambassador Alma Adams,
mm-hmm.
and we have Gilbert Morris, Professor Gilbert Morris.
And he's an ambassador at large.
Yeah, he's an ambassador
at large. I see the minister mentioned his name, but he didn't give a title yet.
That's why. So he's an ambassador with responsibility to the Bahamas Foreign Service Institute.
So I'm just going to repeat that. That's Gilbert Morris, and he's ambassador at large,
yeah.
and he's responsible yeah. for the Institute of doing what exactly?
He will help with the training of these young diplomats.
Nice. That's nice to know.
Him and Keith Russell out of Grand Bahama.
Okay.
Okay. So the structure is being developed. While it's a work in progress.
I understand.
The young recruits are excited about it. We didn't have that opportunity.
Yes, you learned the job.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and we trained. Remember, I told you when I was 14, I got up in class and said I wanted to be a diplomat.
Yes.
And I studied political science
and law.
And history,
I see that in history.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. you had to train yourself in that kind of grounding
mm-hmm.
to make sure that you're able to carry on a sensible conversation if you're posted abroad.
Okay.
So yeah, to my advice to young persons who are interested in the field, and if you were trained in those areas, and it shifted a bit because you could be trained in almost any area.
Okay. Some kind of liberal arts.
Yeah,
and then...
yeah. But the institute will mold you. Mm-hmm. It will give you the kind of training that you need to help you function in the international arena.
This is Guardian AM, and I'm speaking to former Permanent Secretary Peter DeVoe Isaacs, and we're talking about the Foreign Service. And I'm going to move to when you were posted in Haiti. Let me preempt that. You were a career diplomat, and you got an opportunity to be an ambassador.
But wait, then. So, let me tell you how this stuff works.
Okay.
So I left London after being there for 3 years. Mm-hmm. Sir Clement Maynard was the minister at the time. Mm-hmm. So that dates my age.
Yes.
Other than the...
Because I know Clement Maynard's like history.
Other than the grain of the hair.
Oh, okay.
But he then asked me to go to Washington. And there I spent 2.5 years in D.C.
Okay.
And then came back home and... I was asked to go to New York after that. So, I had the plum positions.
Yes.
London, Washington.
I'm jealous.
New York. I'm jealous too.
Yes.
And so, while in New York, and I spent 8 years in New York, mm-hmm. but which was a very, and I went there at 31. So I was
young.
The youngest. Yeah, I was the youngest person appointed in that role.
So hold on. What role was this in New York?
Consul. I was a consul. I was the head of the office.
Consulate. Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I'll tell you a little bit about the... I was hoping to tell you more about the consulate side.
Mm-hmm. Don't go away. I'm going to introduce it right now. Finish this point.
So I want to work up how this Haiti thing came up.
Mm-hmm.
So we were brought home for the annual meeting of diplomats.
Mm-hmm.
And... So all of the diplomats in this room, and Clement Maynard is the minister at the time, and Clement is going around the room, and mm-hmm. they're having the uprising in Haiti
mm-hmm.
way back then. And Clement said, I remember I was sitting next to Winston Munnings, who was the consul general in Miami,
mm-hmm.
and we knew that one of us was going to be announced to go to Haiti. And Maynard said right there... Peter, you going to Haiti.
Just like that.
Yeah, you going to Haiti.
I want to hear more about that right after this commercial break. This is Guardian Radio in the Morning. And just point at you. You going to Haiti.
You going to Haiti.
We're going to be right back after this commercial break.
Throughout our lifetime, we must all make decisions. No matter how we choose, the right one just needs to be made. Like having J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers as your insurance partner. We've been serving the Bahamas for over 100 years. Whether you need home, motor, marine, or commercial insurance, make the right decision. Call 397-2100 or visit jsjohnson.com.
J.S. Johnson Insurance.
Do you know you can get your business cards designed and printed for as low as 18 cents a card? If it's a poster you want, you can pay as little as $6 a square foot. If your print needs are short or long run, digital printing, wide format, or print consultation, call the best. Call Printmasters. Printmasters' goal is to provide its clients with the highest level of personal, professional service at an affordable price. Our state-of-the-art technology also makes working together efficient and easy. Laminations, business cards, flyers, posters, window and floor decals are just a few of the digitized print services offered at Printmasters. Call 302-2361, 302-2361, or visit us at the Nassau Guardian Building in Oaksfield. Print with the best. Print with Printmasters.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio. We're having a conversation with Peter DeVoe Isaacs, and he's explaining his tour as representing the country. Right now, he's in New York, and the then Minister Clement Maynard pointed at him and said, "You,
yeah,
you're going to be the ambassador to Haiti." And start off from there, and then tell me that story.
Well, actually, he said chargé.
And explain the difference between ambassador and chargé.
It's the officer in charge, really.
Okay,
it's the officer in charge, just like the Ms. Pitts is.
For the U.S.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
we tell the for ambassador.
Comes, yeah.
Okay,
but you fundamentally you acting as the person in charge, and that was during some tumultuous years in Haiti. Well, those tumultuous years in
what
Haiti.
What year was this?
It was 1990. It was the years of NAMFI. And
that's the where the United States it came and take Aristide out of the country.
Right before that.
Right before that.
Okay. Yeah. So, the appointment was exciting for me. I was not married.
Okay.
And so you have to take those things into consideration because you were unlike my colleague Carlton Wright,
okay.
whom you should have on your show, by the way.
I will definitely invite
Carlton was actually there during the years of battle.
That should be frightening.
Yeah, and he had a wife and a family there.
He had his wife and family when they had all this tumultuous time.
Yeah. And Carlton, an excellent diplomatic game. Mm-hmm. Carlton spent time there. But so I wasn't able to go to Haiti because the coup occurred.
Wait, you finally get your big position.
I get my appointment, yeah.
And you didn't
I was already in a big position. I was headed in an office in New York.
Yeah, I know American life. I know American life.
So, now I'm getting this appointment to go to Haiti,
mm-hmm.
and I'm saying, "Oh God, this is going to be great. I'll be get a chance to go down there and mm-hmm. do some real yes. diplomatic work." And then, of course, the coup, and I was sent back to New York.
How important is it to have ties back to the home country, the Bahamas? Because I see you live abroad for so long.
Extremely important. Extremely important. You can get detached.
Detached?
Yeah, you can get detached very easily from your country if you stay abroad too long. You begin to take on all of the norms and the cultural traits of the country that you're in and the people who you're mixing with. That when you come back sometimes to your own country
mm-hmm.
and you realize that you're no longer so and so and so and so, and the car doors are not opening for you, and
yes.
you're back home, and you're living amongst people who you grew up with, mm-hmm. and they don't see all of that. They still yes. call you Peter.
Yes.
Then you realize that, hey, you should be coming home more regularly, and you should make sure that you're grounded and regrounded in your cultural norms and everything else, the politics of the day.
Yes.
You should also understand that you miss a lot of opportunities being abroad.
Opportunities? I want to
say. Well, you miss opportunities. You start your families late.
Yes.
You miss out on the opportunities of real estate and stuff like that. There are a lot of things you actually miss because you're away so long.
And you need to get acclimatized to it.
Yeah.
I have a cousin who was in Brussels for a while,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
her returning home was kind of uneasy.
The thing about diplomacy, and particularly people at the highest levels,
mm-hmm.
they must understand that they're appointed as political, they're political appointees.
Mm-hmm.
And when the government changes, or when there's an election call, they should be prepared to come home.
Pause right there.
Uh-huh.
Is that just the ambassador? It was seems
like the highest. Because people at the other levels really, historically,
mm-hmm.
were not political appointees.
Okay.
Now that's happening a lot now. So you're seeing a lot of sub-head levels, like vice consuls and this, that, and the other, who are being appointed, and they're considered political appointees. But I'm talking mostly about heads.
I just realized what time it is, and I'm intrigued with the story, and it's clearly is I need to have an hour and a half, and just not just an hour. I read that recently the royal family will be visiting the Bahamas. It's been 10 years since they've been here last, right? And the prince and his wife, mm-hmm. Milton, will be here. Who pays for that? I mean, do we as a country say, like, let me give you a donation since you're coming to visit us, as they do their Caribbean tour of Belize, Jamaica, and the Bahamas?
I don't know who is paying for that, but I don't think the government of Bahamas is. Okay. You know, we're going to be celebrating our 50th anniversary next year of independence. Mm-hmm. And I think what we are going to do with this, I think the prince's visit is a visit throughout the Caribbean.
Yeah, three countries.
Yeah, so I don't think the Bahamas government is paid for it. I stand to be corrected.
And I assume if any cost would be like for security type things.
And and we have to put those mechanisms in place. We put it in place for any head of royalty or head of state coming in.
I understand.
I want to make a point about the 50th anniversary because it's been handled out of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
Oh, it is?
A lot of it is.
Okay.
A lot of it is.
So we're inviting some dignitaries down for the 50th also?
Well, yeah. You know, that's going to be a big show. And it's going to be a big event.
You're getting me excited. So I'm going to try quiet down so you can speak. But I'm excited about this big show. Go ahead.
Well, look, it's the 50th anniversary. Yeah. 50 years of the Bahamas being an independent country. Mm-hmm. You don't think we ought to...
A big splash. I mean, I want to see money spent all over the place.
Yeah, so you have, I think, their visit. Mm-hmm. We're going to use the opportunity during their visit.
Like springboard it.
To talk a little bit about it, because they're likely to be the ones who will come for the 50th.
Okay.
In an official capacity.
And like in things like that, how does foreign affairs involve themselves like with these dignitaries?
Well, our overseas offices, we have a protocol department.
Okay.
Visits of this nature are handled by Government House. So royalty, remember now, the Governor General is representative of the Queen.
Yes.
So the Governor General has first focus with regards to this visit anyway, because, you know, these are sovereign, this is the children of the sovereign coming to one of their realms, a country in their realm. But the foreign affairs would have a lot to do with the organization of the program, of the visits, of the Leslie O'Brice, I think, is the lady now
who for Commonwealth.
Who's the
CARICOM?
CARICOM, but she's also in charge of the coordination of the 50th anniversary.
She is. Leslie Price is the coordinator for the 50th.
Maybe I shouldn't have said that.
No, but I'm excited. And it's too late now.
But she is the person, and she resides in our ministry.
Yes.
And so by virtue of that, foreign affairs will be heavily involved in the...
I'm excited. I mean, you know when there's certain things that you need a celebration? I think the Bahamas needs a celebration.
This will be done well.
This will be done well.
We have done well as a nation.
Okay, yes, okay? We have.
We have done well as a nation, and you... I had an opportunity to bring this thing full circle as a young boy coming out of Culmersville and in the valley and having an opportunity to go and do everything that I wanted to do beyond my wildest dreams and imagination to represent my country in the major capitals of this world. And then, of course, coming back home and then and getting to become permanent secretary in the ministry, which is the head of the Foreign Service.
And some advice. What kind of advice would you give persons working in the diplomatic corps and foreign affairs in general?
I'll tell you one thing. I take my hat off to them. It's hard work. I think a lot of people see the people in foreign ministry as sipping cocktail and this.
That's
that.
What I see.
Yeah, and no. The consular division of the ministry, for example, a lot of Bahamians know about the Ministry of Foreign Affairs when they can't get their passports or when they're stranded. Mm-hmm. And so we have a consular, now that's consular. You see, remember I talked about the multilateralism and all that?
Yes.
There's a consular affairs. Mm-hmm. So we have officers over there who are actually dealing with those kinds of matters, helping people in distress, helping people who've passports are lost, the passport office falls under us.
Yes.
And so we are responsible for issuing passports and helping people when they get themselves in trouble overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And Bahamians are everywhere now.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing some great things. The diaspora doing some great things. But, you know, once one or two times, they're getting themselves in trouble.
So I'm just going to ask that. What if I get myself in trouble? How does the foreign affairs help me?
Well, we will make sure find you a good lawyer if you get yourself in trouble.
I appreciate that.
And give you advice on the local laws and regulations and rules of the country.
Mm-hmm.
We also will do consular visits to people who are incarcerated.
Okay.
So I remember doing that when I was in New York. And, you know, we visited the prisons in the
and
area.
And we have some type of agreement between the countries? And
well, that's a general agreement.
Okay.
In fact, the country is supposed to tell you when they've arrested or when they're detaining a
good
national
to know.
Of yours. Yeah. Yeah. So whenever we arrest somebody in our country who's a citizen of another country, we have to inform that country.
Mr. DeVoe Isaacs, I enjoyed this conversation. This was too short, as you know, it's too short, because I wanted to go in more detail about your career.
I know, we didn't talk too much about my career.
Because I want to know how your wife took it with you traveling and your career, you know, your children. So that means you have to come back. You got to come back, and we'll start off from that point.
I'd be more than happy to come back. But what I'll do is bring my friends with me there.
Yes.
I'll see if I can get Carlton to come
yes,
with me.
Yes, bring him
if that's okay with you.
Yes, you sit back and forth. We go back and forth.
But one thing I want to say in passing or in ending is that we build on some strong foundations, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
People like George Stewart.
Yes.
You wouldn't know of him, but George is the one who mentored me.
Okay. So mentorship is important.
Oh, yeah. Jimmy Moultrie, Patricia Rogers,
mm-hmm.
the Idris Reed.
Mr. Reed, too.
Used to be a high commissioner. Yeah. And